I think, did you want to start with 2677, Representative Erickson? The chair will move that, although we don't have a quorum yet, and then where would we like to go with this bill? To the general register? Okay. So the chair will move House File 2677 be recommended to pass and referred to the general register. Representative Erickson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. 2677 is a bill that's good for townships and counties because they can work together on road projects. I got this idea from reading the auditor's best practices review that came out last November, and I don't think it was probably 2 weeks later that I called the auditor's office and said, I read recommendation 3, I'd really like to draft a bill, and I went ahead, and they were delighted that I'd read the report and found that the auditor had made this recommendation about piggybacking on existing competitive bid road construction and maintenance projects. So that's what this bill is about. It gives townships and counties the opportunity to work together within, you know, the terms that are a part of law now.
Okay. Would we like the state auditor's office to say something? Are you here to provide advice or the township association?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem with the Township Association. We are grateful to the state auditor's office for recognizing this need. Last summer, they went on the road with us and sat in on some of our training and contracts. They heard the situations where townships had been approached by contractors saying, well, we could come over and help you with this road project. We could save you money if you can just sign on to the county contract, but which had already been let by competitive bids. It already followed all formal process to make sure they were the lowest responsible bidder. Unfortunately, with the way the laws are set up, there's no process to do that. And so what happens is instead of saving money, the township has to go out, pay for re-advertising, get the same contractor to come back, but now that contract price has gone up a little bit because they have to recharge their delivery fees, their appearance fees that would have been saved if they could have just piggybacked off the existing pre-let contract. And so this money, this bill will save tax dollars. It will streamline procedures without risking any of the safeguards intended by the law. So we appreciate your support. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for offering up this bill.
Has the townships done any analysis in regard to some sample projects that maybe they could have hopped onto in terms of cost savings?
Mr. Chair, no, we have not done a tracked, you know, any way of fiscal analysis for it. But, again, the projects tend to be road improvement projects, washout repairs, rebuilding after a washout that are, and the contractor's sitting there doing the exact same work on the county road that we intersect with, and they come over and say, well, we can shave off a couple thousand dollars just because we're already here. We don't have to
bring all the equipment out there. And
exactly.
So
just,
okay.
You know, it's just like when you call a plumber to your house, they charge you $90 if they do anything or not. Contractors for road projects.
No offense,
Mr. Chairman. $10, not $90. To that statement,
there's a mandate for calling them out. There's a fee for them to come out and see what the problem is,
right,
and the contractors do on a much higher level the same thing, and we can save much of that expense as well as the publication cost and the delay time. Of having to do a separate contract. And the reality is, especially in the rural areas, you're lucky if you get one contractor to respond to that bid process anyhow. So 90% of the time or more, you're going to get the same person who's doing the county work because they're the one available to do the work in your area.
Now, have we talked about this for cities? If you're doing a county road that intersects a city and they're on the edge of town, so on and so forth, or county and state roads, or is it we're just going to start out small? Or is this for the auditor to answer? Have you just tried to start out with this little item and maybe build into those later?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tony Sutton with the State Auditor's Office. That was the in doing this best practices review, that it was really the townships who had expressed time and again on this particular issue, and it was felt that since townships almost all of them are basically run by volunteers or quasi volunteer officials. This seemed to benefit them the most in sort of a small step to help them this process.
Okay. Bill relating to local government. Okay. Questions, Representative Krenke?
Chairman, I'm just wondering if Representative Erickson would be open to a friendly amendment. I've been working on some legislation for years that your concept be expanded to the state. In other words, the state enter into contracts with counties and local jurisdictions to do maintenance on state highways instead of, as I said, it's what I call the anti-orange truck bill. So would you be willing to work on a small friendly amendment, Representative Erickson?
Mr. Chair and Committee, I think not today. I think what you're talking
about. I'll wait till we get to the floor, Mr. Chair.
And he will.
Anyone else have a question or concern about this? Is there anyone in the audience I want to testify for or against the bill that's waiting here? Okay, we're still one person short of a quorum. I know Mr. Shipman was able to represent Mallory around, or
he's around.
Okay, he's around, but not here.
Mr. Chairman, I said if we want to lay the bill over, I could go get my amendment.
Well, we'll lay the bill over, and I believe you had another bill, Representative Erickson, and what we'll do is we'll move House Bill 2872. You recommend to pass. This one goes to the register as well. Representative Erickson? Okay. And be placed in the general register. A little bit longer bill, so why don't you take us through this one and let us know what's in this one.
Mr. Chair and Committee, Section 1 and sections that continue through 18 define political subdivision and special districts for the purposes of laws governed by the state auditor. I got involved because of Section 19, and again, I was doing my reading. This time it was Minnesota Special District Finances, the 2003 Revenues, Expenditures, and Debt, entitled Minnesota's Hidden Government, and I found on page 17 a listing of all the special district descriptions and all those that we have authorized to expend dollars that they do receive from the taxpayers of Minnesota, and then found a recommendation from the state auditor on page 12 of the report in which she spelled out the need for audit reports. The state auditor's office found it difficult to determine the full universe of special districts in the state because there is no central location to report the establishment of such districts, and to remedy this, she suggested the state legislature require that all special districts whose governing bodies are appointed or made up of local officials or directly elected officials be required to provide their bylaw agreements or articles of incorporation to the office of the state auditor. And if you check Section 19, that requirement is due within 60 days of adoption to the auditor's office. And then the audit requirements are spelled out in Subdivision 2 and the presentation to the governing board and the state auditor in Subdivision 3. I think, Mr. Chair, in light of the fact and committee that we have at least 25 special district descriptions, and among them many, many organizations such as watershed districts, such as hospital districts, such as regional development commissions, that we hold them more accountable. And I thought this recommendation was an excellent one, and again, I drafted it and got the blessing of the state auditor's office.
Okay. The one question I had is the repealer. Mr. Shepard knows it is. Isn't the repealer usually added as an addendum at the end? I don't even see what it is we're repealing here, but I thought that was in house rule that we had to have repealers attached at the end of bills, but maybe not.
By the Senate.
Mr. Chair and members, I think that just because of the conversion to the new revisory computer system, they may be having some trouble appending those repealed statutory sections on, but I can, if Mr. Sutton knows what it is right offhand, otherwise I can read to you what that is that's repealed.
Mr. Sutton, do you want Mr. Shepard just to let us know what it is, or?
It's the current definition.
Mr. Chairman, it's the current definition of
special district? Okay.
So you're just political subdivision.
Political. Okay, so you're just the new definition is on page one. And you're bringing in regional agencies, metropolitan agency, and kind of expanding it?
Correct.
Okay. All right, questions? Representative Kahn?
Is there any opposition to this bill?
Anybody in the audience that's opposed to the bill? Okay, I guess we haven't
heard
any.
Mr. Chair and committee,
yet,
I've been in front of several committees and no opposition. So we went to local governments and
GovOps and local governments.
GovOps, yep.
Okay, so I haven't heard of anything either, but.
Mr. Chairman, I think I probably have an amendment for this bill by the time it gets to the floor, too.
Is that a secret?
No, it's just
what it is. Yeah, we're just going to see here. Okay. This one, in terms of details and whatnot, I don't have any questions because I saw it in GovOps already, so my questions were answered there. Representative Hilty, anything you want to ask about this?
I don't think so, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, President Mullery is still not here, so I'm not sure. I think we'll end up probably laying both of these bills over until a quorum arrives. We just need one more member. So, Representative Erickson, I don't know if you want to hang out and see what happens here, or
sure, Mr. Chair, I can sit in the audience and wait.
Okay, but we'll lay both these over until someone
I'm
arrives.
I'm sorry, you have such a tardy group.
Yeah, we do. It's very difficult. But we'll move on to the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. House Bill 2921, Representative Severson. The Chair will move House Bill 2921 directly to pass and be referred to what committee, Representative Severson? Ways and Means?
Taxes, sir.
Oh, taxes. Okay.
Don't bypass taxes.
Okay.
It's such a fun and exciting time this year.
It is. I heard that. Are we finishing the 316th bill today, or... /DOMA/8020/
Can we put the Eagle Rights in there?
Pottery and Crafters and whatever else is in there now. All right. We will send this to the Tax Committee next. Representative Severson, I heard this in GovOps, but I believe Representative Kahn and I are the only two who sit on that committee that are on this committee. So we're going to try to keep our comments constrained to page 8, starting with Section 8, Appropriations. Since we're the State Government Finance Committee, and we're just going to talk about those little items that you have that appropriate the money. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I do want to say thanks for hearing this bill. We're pretty excited about the provisions in this bill for veterans. And as I've said in the committees that I've been in before, this is part of a tool that we're working on to make Minnesota a more friendly place for veterans to come to, whether it's after they get out of the service, come back to get additional education opportunities, or whether they retire from the military, or whether they're retired and want to stay in Minnesota. This bill does a lot to keep a lot of talent and a lot of good citizens in the state of Minnesota. And as you said, Mr. Chair, Section 8 is the appropriations, and Subdivision 1 is $3 million for the State Soldiers Assistance Fund. This fund is set up, currently exists with an annual appropriation of $1.4 million. We have a large number of soldiers and warriors that are coming back from combat areas and that are getting out of the military coming back. This fund is being beefed up to take care of some of the needs for the members and their families that provide gap funding until the federal programs can kick in. So the last thing we want to see is some veterans coming home, going through that transition process, which is sometimes pretty emotional, making that adjustment and kind of not getting a job immediately, and then the family is having problems coping with all that. This fund is being beefed up to address that issue. $200,000 in Subdivision 2 is for the development of a veteran's website. And another point of information for our veterans, whether they're here or whether they're over there getting ready to come back. It has a tremendous amount of information throughout our whole system, whether it's Department of Economic Development, whether it's Defense Alliance Fund, whether it's the Veterans Program. There are all kinds of information spots, but they aren't collected into one spot. So when an individual wants to do the research, typically he's not going to have it all in front of him. And that's what this does. This is going to be put together by the Veterans Affairs Office, a single individual webmaster who's going to go, who is going to construct the website itself, and then another individual that goes out to the individual sites and does the liaison with them, and then really brings together the whole program. So this is a website that is one size fits all. It meets all the necessary criteria for giving our vets the best information that they can get when they come in. A classic example of this is one in which a veteran came back, and his business, because he was a business owner before he left, came back and his business was out of bucks, and he had lost a lot of his clientele. And there is a provision that says if you were a soldier, come back, and you were a business owner, and there isn't the money there, your business is having problems, there's a fund to help fund them or to support them while they're going through that transition period. And nobody knew about this fund, but we, in our work through the Military Action Group, found out that from the SBAs that there is this available, and so that would address some of the issues, and we've fixed some problems already with this. The website will be the kind of the final area that we need to construct this to make it veteran-friendly.
Okay. We're going to officially call the meeting to order, so we have a quorum now, and we can vote on bills. When you're done presenting your bill, Representative Severson, we're going to go back to the Erickson bills real quick and move them on.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's see. You just finished with the website sub 2, so we'll move on to sub 3. We'll just hold questions and let you present, so go ahead.
Subdivision 3 is for our veteran county service officers and for helping them in some of the areas to get out to the individual veterans that we're having problems making contact with. And if there are questions on that program, I'm going to have Commissioner Dyrud come up and speak to that specifically. Subdivision 4 is $2.6 million for higher education. Prior in the bill, we set up a requirement that each university that has a veteran population has to have a room set aside or a space set aside for veteran assistance. So when those veterans are coming back, they get into the higher education institution, they have a place where they can go to find out what their benefits are, what possible help that they can get, and actually sign up so that we know where they are, who they are, and how we can get to them on the campus. So this this provision is the $2.6 million for manning that office, and it will be manned by veteran individuals who have been through the process, so they know what's going on with the higher education system, and they'll also receive some training. And this this dollar amount basically allows us to give grants out and some of the other things that will provide a home-friendly environment for these veterans as they return on a higher education campus. And $100,000 goes to the Board of Trustees to have oversight over this particular program between MNSCU and the VA. Okay. And that's the Section 8, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. My question, Representative Severson, on page 9 on the website issue. I know the Veterans Affairs Department has a website currently, if you go on, and it's got kind of a lot of nice things on it. And then there's also a federal one with links that you can go back and forth. I'm just wondering, what would we be, you know, we're going to hire two full-time people forever. What are they going to be putting on the, you know, what are they going to do from 9 to 5 each day that's not on the website already? I'm kind of wondering, you know, I can see it as a one-time appropriation because, as you mentioned, there's a lot of things that were missing when we have soldiers coming back. There were some funds that were not mentioned. There were programs that were not there. But, you know, after a year's time, I'm kind of wondering, okay, we've got the website beefed up. We've got all the programs in place, and now we're going to have two people kind of hanging out, and I'm not sure on a permanent basis that this is something that we'd want to make a one-time appropriation to make sure it's there. And maybe Veterans Affairs would know that better than what you would.
Commissioner Dyrud, come up and
okay, Commissioner, thank you. Did you understand the question that, you know, you have a nice website already, and I'm just kind of wondering, are we going to have two Maytag repairmen kind of sitting around from 9 to 5 each day wondering, okay, what do we put on the website? And, you know, I'm supportive of the veterans, but I don't want to be just totally dismissive of some of the accountability things that we also need to say, hey, is this something we need forever? Is it something that we should beef up and reappropriate next year in the budget year after one-time appropriation? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Clark Dyrud, Commissioner, Veterans Affairs. This appropriation deals, as you say, with two positions. First of all, thank you for the comments about our website. We most of the time get complaints about it because it is not adequate. There is a bewildering array of benefits from the public sector, the private sector, agencies, and dealing with veterans. There is no standardized place to find that. So the idea is to get a true portal. Someone, a webmaster in and of him or herself is relatively easy. You just get something on the web. But to find the stuff that's out there is very difficult, and then to keep it current. So this involves tracking down all the information, designing a website, keeping it current, but the design needs to be veteran friendly. What the idea is for a veteran sitting, typing in Minnesota veteran, and then to come to a portal, being able to go into housing, into jobs, into health,
all the county service organizations,
into counties, exactly. Okay. But it's kind of one stop shopping.
Yeah.
And whether or not we were doing it on our own website or create a special one, either way would work. The idea is it is very complex. The other part of that, that would be in cyberspace. The other part of that would be a coordinator with all in person to interface with other agencies and the general public and private sector. There, too, we have, right now we are being inundated with requests for people that want to, not only by veterans wanting to know what's out there, but by people trying to reach out to veterans. We are even being approached by the Veterans Administration. How can we reach out? Do you know when are veterans coming back? How can we reach out to them? So there is a whole lot of churning right now of people trying to connect, trying to get together, and so the idea one of the positions would be a concentrating on connecting with other agencies, education of other agencies, organizing such things as seminars or just information or handouts or acting as a liaison between other people. So that is the two positions are not completely for the web. One would concentrate on the web. The other would concentrate with agencies and individuals.
Mr. Chair, to that point, during this military action group, we've had a growing attendance from all sectors of Minnesota, basically, and we just recently had an organization called the Defense Alliance come, who had just hired a lady who is an expert in federal contracts. Now, Minnesota is supposed to get 3% of their state contracts are supposed to go towards veterans. And currently we have about 1.17. And the federal contracts bring in hundreds of millions of dollars into the state, and they are exclusive to Minnesota veterans. So on this website, we will have a spot that says, are you a business owner or are you a veteran? And so that's a single place that they can go to, and they can begin to understand some of the entitlements, some of the bidding process on the federal level that they have access to here at the state. So it's really, this process is kind of a one-stop shopping, but it has a tremendous amount of information that we need to glean from all of these different areas and try and bring them in and put it in some cohesive manner that will actually be user-friendly.
So, Commissioner, out of the whole bill, really your department, these are the only two FTEs you're getting out of this bill. Otherwise, it's mainly grants for higher ed, grants for counties, grants for families.
There would be, we would be getting some additional staff. For example, the SSAP, the State Soldiers and Assistants, we would be getting two additional Veterans Assistance Coordinators and one clerical staff. But most of that money is program, right to the veteran and family. Under the incentive-based county service officers, there would be two positions. Those would be education and training of county service officers, creating training manuals, creating training seminars, etc., for county specific to county service officers, and to monitor there will be benchmarks for that. And to monitor, so there would be two positions there out of the $3 million, and in the higher ed education assistance officers, there would be I think two positions there. a supervisor, I'm from our department, not counting their, do you want me to speak to how that $2.6 million was arrived at? Or do you want me to wait? Do you want to go back to the...
I think Representative Kahn might have some questions on the... Weren't you going to ask about the 2.6 like in GovOps?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll maybe wait with that. I think she's going to question.
Are we going to do the bill first?
Okay. So did you want to...
I think I had that answered in GovOps, actually. Representative Severson had this bill in GovOps, and I think I'm comfortable with that. So. Okay. So I don't know if we want to move those Erickson bills out quickly.
Mr. Chair, we'll just step aside for just a couple moments while you move those other
bills. Right. Did anyone have any other questions on those Erickson bills? We kind of waited. So the first motion is that the chair will move 2677 be recommended to pass and be referred to the general register. Any questions? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Bill is passed. The chair will move 2872 be recommended to pass, be referred to the general register. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. Bill passes. Okay, we're back to House Bill 2921, Representative Kahn.
Yes, well, I was concerned about putting that, but I guess I have one general question. As far as I'm concerned, this ought to be a federal problem. What are we getting from the federal government?
We get Representative Kahn. We get $1.1 billion a year from the federal government for veterans. Of that, $600,000 breaks down to direct compensation pension to the veterans, and about over $400 million is in hospital care.
Okay. Well, I'm also concerned about these special programs, like the Special Vets Assistance Program and so forth. Why isn't the federal government giving us more of that?
Are you referring, Chair?
Let me see which
one. Soldiers Assistance Fund?
Yes. Why?
That fund was created in 1943. It's the State Soldiers Assistance, FFAP fund, we call it. That is created to help veterans and their dependents, which is very unusual. The VA only helps veterans. This has provisions to help dependents as well, spouses, children. There are about four. We are going to get an attachment that shows how that money has been spent in the past. There is a program, for example, a dental program for it's kind of a safety net for veterans and their children. There's an optical program. There's a short-term subsistence program at maximum 6 months, but it takes a while to get on the VA pension or Social Security. Meanwhile, they are without any help. So
any of these things, Mr. Chairman, are any of these things eventually picked up by the federal government? I thought you said something like it takes a while to get the federal benefits.
Exactly.
So does the federal government eventually pay for some of these things?
Yes, sir.
Chair, Representative Kahn, for certain things like this help to the spouses and children, they never do.
Okay.
For the veteran, dental, no. Optical, no. Unless certain veterans will qualify for that, but it's a very specific criteria to qualify for it federally. So this program has been designed kind of as a safety net for the neediest of the veterans and their families. We also have been very responsive over the years, or tried to be, to things like the floods. The tornado in Comfrey, we helped with a one-time small stipend to veterans. In the city of Comfrey. Things of that nature, we can be fairly responsive to emergent needs.
Okay. I thought I heard you say, and just correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I heard you say was that this fund is also used to fill a gap because the federal government would be slow in getting to get through the paperwork. Is that not true, or is that true?
Yes, sir.
Chair, Representative Kahn, partially true. There are times when someone is applying for a pension, and that can take 6-8 months. We will fill it. It's a maximum of 6 months. But that same program, the subsistence, also works out for someone who a classic example would be a truck driver, a family, breaks a leg, can't work for 3 months. They would not qualify through general assistance. they have a great need for a short period of time. We will step into that breach, and that would be the VA only will pay a pension if it is permanent and total disability. So there are some veterans that would not qualify for a VA, and they have a short-term need. So
what I'm interested in is, are there places where we're using this fund to fill a gap until something comes from the federal government? I thought I heard you say that. If
that
it doesn't do it, then just say it doesn't.
Well, it does in those certain examples.
Okay. Well, let me get specifically what I'm interested in. In the case where it's being used to fill a gap because the paperwork is slow, and so a federal then money comes, and I don't know if it comes so it's retroactive, so it goes back, but I'm interested in what oversight we have that there isn't double dipping, that the state program ends when the federal program starts, or if the federal money comes in to fill, you know, it's just that it was slow so that you had a need that's now, you know, what we do to recover the money that the state put out.
Chair, Representative Kahn, there is very strict guidelines that if a person qualifies for any other program, whether it's general assistance or anything like that, they are not qualified for our benefit.
Okay.
So
what kind of oversight is done for that? How do you you're giving out a benefit, and how do you check that they're not getting either a federal benefit or general assistance or something? What kind of...
Chair, Representative Kahn, every applicant we cross-check with Maxis.
Okay.
Our staff has direct access, so every claim we look at
okay.
very carefully.
So is there an example then for this where a person has applied for some kind of federal thing that... program that they're eligible for, they're not getting, it's taking some time to get that, so they're getting state funding, then they get the federal program, and the federal program goes back to the day they applied for it, or the day that they became eligible for it, do we take back that state money that they were given once they get the federal money that covers that same, that where we would not have given them the state money had they been an immediate recipient of the federal money? Do we go back and take the state money back?
Chair, Representative Kahn, we do not.
Why not?
It's a relatively short period of time. We're looking at quite small amounts of money, very small amounts of money. And typically, that is not the major use of that. It is, we have not gone after that.
I guess, I wouldn't, I guess that when the person initially applies for it, I think there just ought to be a statement that they agree to and sign that if they end up getting federal money that covers exactly, so that they would not, what I'm thinking of, they would not have gotten the state money had the federal money been there from the start. They come to you and they say, I have federal money that's doing this, this, and this, and you would not have given them state money. Then, if they got state money because they're waiting for this federal money, there ought to be a statement that they just sign it, and agree to that then the state money is refunded when the federal money comes. That it becomes, in a sense, becomes a loan instead of a grant if they're getting federal money.
Right. Chair, Representative Kahn, That is a very excellent point. There is, I wouldn't have any idea of the percentages, but there is not always the effective date of the federal benefit does not always come back. So I
understand that.
But we can
just
certainly
in the cases where it is. I guess I'd like to know
yes.
how much of that would be covered by a double payment,
yes.
so that this could, in a sense, be almost a revolving fund. Part of it could be a revolving fund instead of a. An outright grant.
And
so,
I think we can look at numbers.
If a decision has been made that there's a state program that's doing something that the federal program doesn't do, that's fine. I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in the thing, because you said that part of it was a filling in the time, was to give more timely assistance, I'm interested in how much would be covered by that once the federal grant comes. Because I just really think that, you know, we've had a very adventurous federal government, and I think, you know, they ought to be paying for the stuff that's their fault.
Yes.
Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to go back to the issue you had raised here just a few minutes ago about subdivision 3 of Section 8. And as I read this, I was just wondering if Ms. Roberts could clarify for me then if the appropriation, the $200,000 appropriation, it says in language here, is appropriate in fiscal year 2007, so does that become a standing and open appropriation? It does.
Well, Mr. Chair, it becomes part of the base. It's not a standing and open appropriation, but it would be part of the base for next year, for the next biennium. Of course, the legislature would have the choice to modify that, but current law states that the base going forward is the appropriation that's made in the second year of the biennium with certain adjustments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, you know, my concern, I think, is along the same lines that you had, that, you know, I certainly am respectful to the department, and I think you're doing the right thing here, bringing information from a number of sources together and making them accessible, but I'm not sure if we should not have the right to look at this down the road and have the department come back and let us know, do we really need to fund two positions infinitely on this issue out there?
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner?
Representative Blaine, I would like to point out we don't have a webmaster at the present time. We're a very small agency.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've thrown onto our website, we've sort of taken turns and given it. We have one person dealing with the system. So, I mean, we don't have any functioning web person now.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair and Mr. Dyer, that, you know, I understand and I support you on the appropriation there, but I'm just in my mind looking in even in the private sector and knowing people that do structure websites and ongoing business web accounts out there for companies and others, that a lot of times the big effort is to get this information together, get everything up and running, and then how long or given a period of time to get this structured. After you get to that point, the maintenance part of that is less tedious.
Mm-hmm.
Out there.
Chair,
Commissioner,
Representative Blaine, there's one of these positions would be primarily relating to the web. The other position is, as I said, is dealing as a sort of a coordinator, a liaison, a preparation of information with agencies and private individuals, you know, private sector, et cetera, on that line. And we would be happy to you know, report back how things are developing along that. I mean, we would expect that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. I have Representative De La Forest next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll apologize to my colleagues from the start if this question has already been asked. I apologize for coming late this morning, but a question for the author. Mr. Chairman, in looking under Subdivision 2, that's on page 1, talking about leaves of absence to tend to a family member who has been either injured or killed serving, and what I'm concerned about is the reasonable time language, and I'm concerned that what we're doing here with this language is that we're putting a bereaved, grieving, or family member who is already under a great amount of stress into an adversarial situation with their employer, because I think that in most scenarios, should this become law, the family member who's going to need to invoke the statute is probably already dealing with a somewhat unreasonable or hostile employer, and now you're putting him into a situation where they're having to argue with their employer how much time is reasonable to attend to that family member's funeral or to get their affairs in order or to attend to them for an injury. And so, while I don't have an amendment here today, I would think that the better course of action would be to put some sort of hard number in there, up to 14 days or 3 days or 30, whatever the case may be.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative, we did talk about this at GovOps a little bit, I know, and I don't know that we resolved it, but we did discuss it a tiny bit. Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, and Representative DeLaForce, thanks for asking that question. We do have a companion bill going through the Senate right now. We've been in conference with the NFIB, who is really the main concern here for smaller businesses. Under the Federal Family Leave Act, in this provision, any company that has 50 employees or more gets 12 weeks of basically unpaid leave under this provision of the family. Now, for those underneath, my position was if they are 50 or less, the employer more than likely knows the employee very well, and it's to his interest to give that employee as much time off as possible, but to negotiate with the employer. Now, what has happened on the Senate side is we've come up with a figure of 5 days. That would be 5 working days, and there's a weekend on each end, which gives about 9 days of unpaid leave as authorized by this statute, and that is an amendment that will come forward. I intended either to do that in taxes or to just amend it on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mrs. Kavanaugh, as I said, I think, you know, having served in the National Guard, fortunately, I never had to face a situation like this, but no doubt, as you know, and Mr. Dyrud will attest, there are employers out there who, you know, regardless of the size of their business, are somewhat hostile or indifferent to the needs of soldiers or the family members. So I think the language, or the intent of the language, is good, but as I said, I think it would be far better to put a hard number in there and then remove the need for a family member to have to negotiate with their employer and get stuck in a situation and God knows, even maybe have to push it to the courts, which we wouldn't want to have to do so. Representative Severson, I appreciate the fact that you're looking to bring an amendment forward. I think that's a better course of action. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, how many full-time equivalents are there currently in the Veterans Affairs Office?
Chair, Representative, thank you. Right now, our entire department from stem to stern is 40 people.
So this legislation looks to more than double the size of your office?
In terms of staff, if you count the campus reps, yes.
Are the campus reps counted as Veterans Affairs and not MNSCU? The last subdivision, you know, talks about MNSCU gets one person, so all the other coordinators are considered Veterans Affairs employees. Commissioner, all the campus reps are considered Veterans Affairs employees, not MNSCU employees or U of M employees.
Correct, would be.
Representative Krenke?
Yes. So to answer, Chair, Representative Krenke, yes, we would more than double. This is all we have.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I have some serious concerns about how this language is written with regard to higher education assistance offices. The language is extremely broad, saying that if the commissioner, if there is a need as determined by the commissioner, each campus of the University of Minnesota, each institution of state colleges, each private college, how many higher education institutions are there in the state of Minnesota?
Chair, Representative Pinkney, there are 196 institutions that are approved to handle veterans benefits or receive veterans benefits. Currently, there are 187 of those that have veterans attending. In the month of February, there were 4,851 veterans in the state of Minnesota receiving education benefits attending these institutions. And in the last VA fiscal year, there were 8,049 veterans spread out over the year. Some obviously drop out, so you know, some are in for a semester and not the next, etc. So there are now currently 2,600 National Guard people being deployed to Iraq pretty much as we speak. They are due back starting a year from now, starting next February. I believe the earliest of them will start coming back. And many of them are expected to be going back. And part of the drive behind the campus rep is very difficult to come from a combat situation and get back into the school system. And part of that is to ease the transition, not only with the actual obtaining of the cutting of the red tape. There's great delays in VA benefits there, sometimes 8-9 months. There is also the red tape of the school itself. So the leeway given is not, there are 50 FTEs of campus reps. That's how this dollar figure was arrived at. Those 50 FTEs would be obviously split up. In other words, some would be a quarter time, some would be half time. Some of the large campuses might have a couple. So that is the type of leeway we're talking about based on the need. We have a listing of, you know, we can tell you, I have a list here of all the schools. I can tell you, you know, you name a school, I can tell you how many veterans are in there today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I said, I have a problem with the way the language is written here. You're a returning Guard member. You're 35 years old. You come back and you're unemployed. You're going to seek other needs. Your needs are not necessarily going to get further education at one of these institutions. You come back, and as the commissioner mentions, the battle stress, the transition from being a combat soldier to being a civilian, it might be many other needs that aren't just going to the University of Minnesota. It is you need medical benefits, you need assistance in finding housing. You know, so we're going to more than double the size of the agency, and we're going to park these people at college campuses. I think we need some serious work in this area with regard to if we're going to hire people, let's hire people that are going to help veterans no matter what their need is, not just going back to school. And my gosh, what are we paying our college guidance counselors and all those people who are there now to do? So it seems to me that great idea, but a little too focused and a little too broad in terms of what this section of the bill is doing, as I said, by more than doubling the number of people who are going to be working at the Veterans Affairs Office. And as I said, great if you're 22 and you got to go back to, you want to go back to school, but I can give you some examples that I found out recently that we have a apprenticeship program at the university, at the state of Minnesota has a an approved apprenticeship program for golf pros. Did you know that? Did you know that, Representative Zyver? Did you know that we have a state apprenticeship program which is approved for golf pros?
No.
Well, you want to know why? You want to know why? Caddy shack. Yeah. The reason why is in order to gain veterans benefits, you have to be in a for education. You have to be, or one of the qualifications could be, to be in a state-approved apprenticeship program. So maybe we should look at cutting out the bureaucracy so that a veteran can go get some additional training, some additional work. We also have a problem in the situation of that our current situation with regard to how we determine whether you are in our state-approved apprenticeship program has to do with wage structure. Surprise, surprise. So prevailing wage. So when a veteran comes home and wants to work in an apprenticeship program, but the employer doesn't meet all of the qualifications of the prevailing wage statutes in the state, he doesn't register in the state-approved apprenticeship program, therefore he wouldn't qualify for veterans benefits. So there's a whole set of red tape. There's a whole issue of bureaucracy that I think if you talk to some returning veterans would tell you that it's not just education. There is, as I said, it's housing, it's job search, it's apprenticeship programs, it's a whole myriad of situations that they face. So just to say we're going to hire 50 people to go help returning veterans with, you know, getting their GI benefits for education is great, but I think there are a lot of other needs, and I think that this these people, if they're going to be, if we're going to hire 50 people, let's make sure that they're working to help veterans on a whole variety of needs and situations that they encounter, not just park somebody at Mankato and help them with their classes and their registration and their continuing education.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, one of the reasons that we put this in here is in University of Minnesota, we had some instances, and we put our military action group together, had an individual Bronze Star winner, Ranger, jumps out of airplanes, perfectly good airplanes, totally unreasonable. But he got to this campus, and he found that he was having some problems, and he was associating a lot with other veterans who were having problems trying to integrate into the campus. He went to the administration and said, I'd like to set up a veterans office here. He was denied space. He came to my office, and we sat down and we talked about it. I told him, go back and tell them if they've got room for a GLBT office, they better have room for a veteran office. He went back and told them that. They gave him an office. But that doesn't fix the whole problem. He has put together a package called Comfort for Courage, of which he's going out to Washington, D.C. next week to receive an award from the president for that particular SBA award for putting together this program. But really what it comes down to is, had this one individual not been on that campus, had he not been tenacious enough to say, we need a central office where we can get veterans to come to and we can tell them what their benefits are and we can help them through some of these issues that you're talking about, some of the housing issues, some of the other outlying things that when they come back, that's the last thing on their mind. If we didn't have that there, we would be losing a lot of students on that U of M campus. And in fact, he will testify in your committee in particular about some of the things that have been the benefits of having this campus stationed on the U of M. So it goes far beyond just saying, hey, we've got one person that's planted there and it's just going to talk about veterans' benefits. It's as we've written in the statute here subparagraph 4, it has to be a veteran, and I specifically wanted that to be because they have been through the ringer. They have been had the experience, and now they're going back to help others that are coming in to the universities to guide them through those same experiences. And I would not anticipate this is a lifetime position. I would say that this is probably a position that's going to be there. They're going to, as they go through, it's a part-time position, some student grants, and then once they've gotten through their college degree, they'll probably move on to their degree, and then they'll hire somebody else from that veteran pool. So I don't see this as an FTE position. I see this as one that's part of the student grant program, focused at veterans. And I mean, out of $2.6 million, we couldn't fund 50 full-time employees. Not to do the things that we're asking them to do here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's what's in the fiscal note, 50 FTEs. So we are talking about 50 employees.
Chair?
Commissioner?
Representative Kritke, that is put there to establish a dollar figure. The 50 will not, it'll probably be much more than that. Many of them will be work-study status. We're talking about maybe a quarter time. Maybe somebody might circuit ride between two or three institutions. We are not necessarily, we had to arrive at a dollar figure. So, but that is not they're not going to be 50 full-time employees, is what I'm I want to make that very clear. So
we're not talking, Mr. Chairman, we're not talking about bodies. We don't, you know, that's what FTEs are. Mm-hmm. We're talking about full-time equivalent. It could be 200 people.
Exactly.
I understand that. Okay. That's not, my point is, it's, we are going to talk about more than doubling the size of this agency, more people working in this specific program than in any other area of the department. And is that, I mean, that's the purview of this committee. And I just think that this is rather narrow. Sure. It doesn't say here that there's going to be someone available. It says that if you determine each campus, every campus, doesn't, I mean, it doesn't say whether there has to be a veteran there or not, I assume. But there could be two veterans there. And, you know, so I know that I've spent a great deal of time in this legislature over the last 15 years working to weed out the underbrush that was created 20 or 25 years ago. Okay? And I know Representative Kahn has spent equally an awful lot of time weeding out broad and very unclear statutes that were written, talking about offices that exist. The spent a lot of time working to eliminate the Office of Citizenship and Volunteer Services. Three people that happened to be parked over at the Department of Administration because 20 or 25 years ago, a lieutenant governor thought that it would be a great thing to do. And then when the lieutenant governor was out of office, well, what are we going to do with these people? Well, we'll park them over at the Department of Administration. So, as I said, we need some definition here as to the number of people, the number of veterans that are going to be served. I want accountability in the program. I don't want somebody just parked somewhere saying, well, gee, here's an office. You know, if you're a veteran or if you have concerns, you know, stop by my office between the hours of 1 and 3. I want to make sure that these people are actually doing something to help these people, not just another, not against the individual, but another bureaucrat parked in an office somewhere.
I was wondering, where's the language on each campus? Is that, we talked about that in GovOps. I'm trying to find it. Is it?
It's on page 2, section 3.
Page 2, okay. That was on page 9 of the appropriations.
And Mr. Chair, I believe it says, if needed, as determined by the commissioner previously, at each campus. So it would be a determination, and I think the criteria that we've set up there is that if there are veterans and a significant amount of veterans on that campus, then there would be a need for that.
Talked about that a little in GovOps about how some of these technical colleges have 300, 400, 500 students total. They might only have 4 veterans in the whole student body who, you know, don't need help, and then we have the Maytag repairman sitting there again. And we talked about, you know, is this something you're going to reevaluate every year? And in some cases, you said you might have someone that's serving 20 counties and 4 schools because they have such few veterans. And that made sense when we talked about that. In terms of using the work study program, now that you have to be eligible based upon your income or lack thereof. And it's $7 an hour, so are you talking about kind of supplanting the $7 or adding on top of it for work study? Or haven't you got that far on that piece yet?
Chair, I would like to clarify, I sort of said it was like work study. In other words, someone would not necessarily be full-time. It might be just 2 hours,
yeah, right.
3 days a week. So I'm sorry, I want to clarify that.
Okay, it would be treated like the work study.
It would be treated like
flexible hours.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, very good. Very good.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to point out that the language on page 2, it says, if there is a need, as determined by a commissioner, each... but it goes on to talk about this part deals with saying the schools will provide space. So that is, that just says that if there is a need, if there are enough veterans, that a school will provide the space. Back then on the other language on page 9, where it talks about the actual fiscal amount. This is very much going to be watched and monitored with a view towards winding down. If the the schools, they're sort of a big usage of the people coming back. So this is not intended to be. This is intended to be revisited, and the guidelines are very much going to be followed. I mean, with the view towards the number of veterans actually attending a school, is there a need for a campus rep? So this is not just to try to throw as many out. So
I know, Commissioner, I work in admissions at Southwest, Truth in Advertising. We started this veterans office on campus so many hours a week. I think it's working well. And we have per capita a ton of veterans in our area coming back from Iraq right now. Right. I mean, we've had people coming in left and right. And so we started the office because we had a glut of people. Now, in talking with that gentleman, over the next, say, 4 years, we'll probably have a pretty good chunk. But as they phase out, if the Iraq war, let's hope, kind of winds down. I'm wondering, in the year 2011, as Representative Krenke said, maybe we have a glut now, but then what happens? We're going to have this big group of people kind of sitting around, and if Iraq kind of phases out and so forth, would it make sense to at least put a sunset maybe?
Right,
5 years from now, so it's we are forced to say, wait a minute, maybe we don't need these anymore. I'm not saying that we, because I think right now there is a need, yet particularly the four-year schools that are seeing a ton of students come in, GI benefits, so on and so forth. But the Office of Volunteer Services is the one that comes to mind. Is somebody's idea is a great thing, and then 15 years later, wondering, what are these three people doing from 9 to 5 every day, and nobody had an answer for it, including them. And I think, if we could work out language to say on such and such date we sunset it, that force of the appropriation is never going to go backward, because whoever's on state gov finance 3, 4, 5 years from now is never going to say, well, let's cut this program, because nobody wants to cut veterans programs. I don't. And nobody's going to have the guts enough to say, geez, maybe there's not enough veterans on the campuses anymore to justify having these positions. And your hands will be tied because the legislature is going to say, you've got to have these veterans offices. And so, Representative Stevens and I have talked about this a little bit. We talked about in GovOps. And I think we're kind of on the same page that this glut is here, the needs are now. But long-term, as the underbrush kind of grows, I think we at least need to talk about a sunset to force us to revisit it when the needs maybe aren't as high, and then maybe we only need, we're going to have a different commissioner. I'm not saying anything against you, but 5, 6 years from now, we might have a different governor, you might retire, whatever, and they may just like fiefdom building and say, hey, I got 50 buddies I'd love to give jobs to, and I'm not saying that's going to be a Democrat, Republican, or otherwise. I just think there's some reasons we sunset things just to force us to reevaluate. The need is there. We're going to reappropriate, no doubt about it. What do you think about that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are currently in dialogue with people from higher ed and from the military affairs and DEED and other agencies involved. And, I mean, we are establishing benchmarks, guidelines. So, I mean, it will be very clearly established and very transparent as to, what does it take for campus to qualify for quarter time, half time, three quarter time, full time, et cetera. It will be very much driven based on the need. So as that falls off, down the road, the numbers will not be there, hopefully. A sunset, we would welcome the opportunity to speak, 5 years in the future or whatever, to say this is what's happened and there is a need or there isn't. And as I say, the benchmark should be transparent enough to stand any scrutiny that may be forthcoming.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative
Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Cleary could come up with a sunset provision on this particular section. I would agree. I think it's a good idea, just to, particularly for these ongoing appropriations where the dynamics are in place there, to have the ability for the legislature to review and say, how has this program been working, and if it's not no longer needed, then be able to sunset it. And I'm torn on whether to make that, you know, 1 year after the war on terror has been finished, or just to put a date on it. Says, yeah, that is an ongoing appropriation.
Mr. Chairman,
or to say 5 years.
Chairman, we still have 70,000 troops stationed in Germany, so I don't think that the we're going to have a presence in Iraq. My wild assumption is for some period of time to come. But the I don't think this is, we're not talking about Iraq here. We're talking about, I mean, we have soldiers coming back from Afghanistan. We have Bosnia. We have people coming back from all over the world. Okay, so that's not, and the point is, again, is that I want, the intent here is to help individuals. Okay,
right.
And that's what I'd like to make sure. I'd like to see us put a report in, is who did we actually help? What did we actually accomplish? Not did we park somebody in office somewhere. That's my concern. Did somebody get assistance? Did that person assist someone in weaving their way through all of the red tape that the federal government, state government's already set up? That's what we're talking about. So we have to have people assist people in weaving their way through the red tape that government has set up. What a program. So let's make sure that we help these people.
I'm not
people.
Opposed to a report on, you know, that, you know, an annual report on veterans served. I think that would be a good.
Okay.
Yep. Anything to kind of make members feel comfortable we're getting our bang for our buck. I don't think anyone's opposed to that.
And, Mr. Chair, we also are training. We're responsible for training. We have been involved in training county service officers since the 40s. So, I mean, something that we're very familiar with. They will have a lot more knowledge. It's not just education benefits. They are going to be not as much information as a county service officer, but they are going to be able to deal with a much broader range. They're for sure going to be able to know who to whom to refer any problems that might come up in any area. So I mean, they will be more than just they will be trained to far more than just education benefits. So that.
Well, does someone have an idea where we've got 15 minutes? We've talked about maybe having a report come back to the committee.
Mr. Chair, and perhaps Mr. Curry could come up with a report criteria and a sunset provision that we can put as an amendment on here. If you'd like to do that now, or you want to wait?
Well, I'd like to move the bill out today if we could. Representative Khan?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions. Do we have a target for this division yet?
No.
I mean, I don't mind moving it out because it has to go to taxes. Yep. Before the final appropriation is made, I really need...
Before any kind of targets. Market, I mean, Ways and Means wouldn't mark it out unless they have some type of...
Well, the tax committee has $317 million in its tax relief account. I think we can fit this in.
I have...
But, you know, I know it can't go to the floor until there's some establishment of that. Representative Conn.
Well, I have... Good that my good friend Representative Prenke went before me because he covered many of the points that I was intending to cover. But I'll go back to the web person. One of the things that we set up, and I'm not sure where it is now in state government, we set up a Department of Technology or a Bureau of Technology or something like that. It then maybe became the Drive to Excellence. But one of the points of that was to make sure that small agencies got computer services without having to hire their own person. So you had someone who was knowledgeable, who would kind of be a circuit rider. So to suddenly see two people hired to do a web page, I was told, I was asking someone about a web service for my campaign, and they would said, find a smart 13-year-old and you'll be in great shape. So I have several. So I'm really concerned about, has this gone, and we used to say that anything that had to do with information services had to go through this Bureau of Technology, and I don't even know what it's called now. You know, have you spoken with the people in the Department of Administration who are...
The Office of Enterprise Technology.
Office of Enterprise Technology.
Okay, thanks. That's right. We tried to take Enterprise. We did take Enterprise.
We took it out of the science, put it back.
Yeah. Okay, but have you talked to those people about what's needed and what they can do for this issue?
Chair,
Commissioner,
Representative Kahn. First of all, I wanted to emphasize that one of the positions is pretty much dealing with, it's a coordinator type position of agencies, individuals dealing with, that have anything to do with veterans.
Mr. Chairman, the ones that deal with information management.
The second, you're talking about the second.
We have not had any.
Before we pass on that, I would think you ought to have some conversation with them and see if they can supply that service, because that's what they were put there to do. I don't remember how much money we gave them that year, and that's the kind of thing, and also the ability to supply good computer services doesn't usually depend on having a body sitting in a particular chair. You know, the internet is a wonderful thing, and the ability to do it in that way is certainly something that
Representative Kahn, as you point out correctly, a smart 15-year-old can get things on a web. That's not the problem. That's relatively easy. The main problem, what we're talking about, is to find that person would find the stuff to put on there. To be brief, in other words, there are so many agencies that have. And I'm not talking about just state. I'm talking about federal. I'm talking about private agencies.
Well,
and so to find out who has information. So information technology people can actually, design the look, something on that. What we're talking about is content.
Mr. Chairman, all I'm saying is from our position, I think it's inappropriate to fund any position related to information technology unless. And maybe exactly what those people will say is, yes, we can't supply that. This needs to be in this specific place. I just think it's very inappropriate to come here before having gone to them to find out what they can do, because we specifically put them in place, or their predecessor and so forth, to deal with the information management needs of small agencies. And that includes how you gather the information and anything else. The second point is just following up Representative Prinky, and I think I raised this point in Gavop, where I asked it. This is an enormous amount of money to put out without any knowledge of what's happening. And I would think some way, Representative Seifert seems to have some knowledge about what's going on at Marshall and what's needed at Marshall and what is appropriate for the institution of higher education to supply themselves. I mean, these are students, and they are entitled to everything from their share of the student fee budget and so forth. So I think it makes much more sense to start. We meet in annual sessions for good reason. We don't have to do things with a five-year outlet. And I can't imagine how you could ramp up before January to spend this amount when we'll be back in session to spend this amount of money. And I just really think that it would be much more appropriate to start much more slowly. I'm fully willing to believe that it's a serious need and that it should be met, but that it should be met in a sensible way that doesn't add permanent employees. I mean, I guess I sort of relied on Representative Prinky. I just looked at the dollar amount and said, that's a large amount of money to put out when you've never done this and you don't know what you're doing. And so, I would like to see a much smaller amount, a phase-in. Instead of going back and having to cut something, which is going to be, I'd rather have us start it in a way that makes sense, in a way that you could come in and say, where has the need been asked for? What can we do with a circuit rider? What can we do, you said like work study. I actually really like using work study people to, particularly if you have people whose career is going to be looking at, or whose academic stuff is going into counseling or psychology or, anything like that, to have them doing this on a work-study basis, which is one of the most cost-effective ways we get of not only getting students through school without a loan issue, but also getting really good, really, really good service from them.
Okay.
So I'm not anxious to see this out today unless it's going to come back to us. Because I really don't want Ways and Means to make the individual distinctions on what the cost should be for this department. There's a further issue that I'm interested in, which is this: somewhere in here there's a point where the veteran has to have enlisted from Minnesota. I don't know what it is. And I got a letter from a constituent, which I think I'd have to find, about some problem of someone who had enlisted from Wisconsin. I don't remember where the problem was. I don't remember if the person was not eligible for a Wisconsin benefit because they had enlisted from Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, I can clarify that.
But I think what we need on that is we really need to talk about, particularly just with Wisconsin, which must be our biggest source of back and forth, a reciprocity agreement. I mean, the idea particularly that a veteran is tied to a place where they enlisted from when they're back somewhere else, and when we have other reciprocity.
To that point, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, there are two provisions in the tuition equity portion of the bill. The first provision says that if you're an undergraduate and you are a veteran, regardless of the state that you are in when you left.
The graduate one was then.
The graduate portion is the one that has a provision that says that the member must be a Minnesota resident and have applied for graduate school within 2 years of being released from active duty.
The language that I would want in that is I would want some language added to that that looks at negotiating reciprocity agreements with the states with which we have reciprocity agreements for that issue. And we have reciprocity agreements for tuition and so forth. So this idea, you know, and the only reason that occurred to me was this difficulty that was pointed out in Wisconsin. And I'm sorry, at this point, I can't remember which way the difficulty went.
Right.
I think it was Wisconsin excluding someone from Minnesota.
You know, for the undergraduate, that's an issue because of the reciprocity. And we had talked about the reimbursement rates are going to be from either the state fund for the college reimbursement mm-hmm. program or from the federal side under the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, the Minnesota state rate would be the rate that is paid, and typically Wisconsin pays at a lower rate. We're still negotiating those issues, so it would be the benefit of Minnesota to charge the Minnesota rate. The graduate side of the equation there is, I am not fully aware of, in terms of reciprocity, whether that is applicable to graduate school or whether that, I know that there was some issue, and the reason that came into being was because of some of the doctoral programs that were available at the University of Minnesota and the reimbursement rates for those, and that's what higher education program had come in and basically written this provision.
Well, I don't...
Yeah. Representative Kahn, we'll try to keep it brief.
Yeah. I don't know if we can solve in this bill, but I would certainly like someone looking at it through this bill, and I would really like, you know, I don't know what you intend to do. I just think that this is too much money to go out without knowing what we're doing. And I think we can put out some money and get to know what we're doing a lot better. And I imagine that probably we could put out as much as they could possibly use. We might designate some places or just some language that would, you know, make sure that it went to where the need was and make sure that there was some kind of circuit rider taking two or three. Then after it was in place, for a while, I mean, we're asking it to be in place for 6 months. I think we've come back with a much better knowledge as to what we need.
Mr. Chair, to that point, one of the rationale for moving in the way we're moving is that the big influx is coming back roughly a year from now. By moving forward, we have, as I say, we've been talking to other agencies.
Yeah.
We would be able to get this in place. Get the training done. We are prepared to do that. We like I said, we've been talking with other agencies. You know, we can get someone in place by September. Start getting people in place by September. Starting to work and get ready. So that was the rationale for moving as quickly as we are. And I would like to point out, Deputy Commissioner Mike Pugliese, I was not aware that has been in contact with Office of Information Technology. I'd just like to have him speak to that.
Very good,
Mr. Chair.
Good to see you,
Mike Pugliese. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. Representative Kahn, we have been in consult with them, and we are going to use them and draw from their expertise in helping us develop it to a certain degree. They cannot provide somebody to construct the whole website for us, portal, and they do charge for their services. so we will have to pay money for some services anyway, and they would not be able to be there on a daily basis to keep things updated, to pull things off that are no longer relevant. So we are going to work with them and draw from their experience as much as we can, but we still are going to require our own FTE to maintain this portal.
Did you have some? Do you have some written correspondence with them about what they would do, how much it would cost, and so forth, and what they think? What I'm most interested in is not what they're how they're saying they can respond to your wants. I'm interested in their doing an evaluation of your wants and see what they say, and seeing if using their expertise they think that that's necessary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, I don't have anything.
I think you should put another FTE there to deal with the, the range of issues that are necessary for them.
I don't have anything in writing. It's all been verbal, but I certainly can address that with them and try and get something formally in writing from them, what they can provide and what the fees would be.
Commissioner or Representative Severson, I was noticing in the higher ed section, if the commissioners determine the needs and so forth for higher ed, why is MNSCU carved out at $100,000? Wouldn't you just do that yourself if you think they need a statewide coordinator just for that system? Roughly have the same number of students that the U of M has, and I'm trying to figure out why MNSCU would force them to get $100,000, I suppose, for an $85,000 person with $15,000 of benefits to, you know, I'm not going to say the Maytag repairman one more time, but, you know, what is this guy going to do from 9 to 5 every day? And if it's something that's a need, the commissioner would just say, hey, we need this $100,000, and he would just designate it for that. So I'm trying to think why those four lines are, why we would just take that out, Commissioner.
Chair, to that point, I'd like to have Mr. Steve France from Higher Ed. He will address that issue.
Mr. France, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Steve France. I'm with the Office of the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We are, as you know, a huge system. We have 32 institutions with 53 campuses, 46 communities, 369,000 students, and 32,000 graduates, just quickly. We have four or five of these centers set up now, as Representative Seifert has indicated at Minnesota Southwest Minnesota State University is one. There's one set up at Central Lakes. There's one that is at Minneapolis Community and Technical Colleges. We have a lot of campuses to go. What we propose to do is to coordinate veteran services provided on each campus, to assist in developing veteran services centers on all campuses, and to provide training for staff using these funds. Whether the funds would come to the Board of Trustees directly or through a contract with Veterans Affairs, as you suggested, the end result is the same. We need that help to move these centers forward and to have those located on each campus. If the committee would prefer a different mechanism to bring those funds for those purposes, that's fine with us. We see this as a need for our students and for our institutions, and want to move quickly and directly to solve that problem.
Okay. And is that a way that you can take the four centers you have now and have them? I mean, you need someone at MNSCU Central to somehow direct this?
No, Mr. Chair. Precisely your point is how we intend to move.
Okay.
There is a person at Central Lakes that we would like to have work from Central Lakes to all the schools. Perhaps we'll do this regionally. As you well know, Mr. Hubley at Marshall is someone who we've been working with also. And we'd like to take that expertise and spread it around the state with those people doing that job. I don't anticipate someone sitting in St. Paul.
Okay.
I see someone regionally working with schools to help them develop these things.
I see it. I mean, the way it's worded, it says to fund a system-wide coordinator, and
yes.
I was envisioning that you guys would have maybe the Minneapolis person deal with the Metro, Central Lakes at the north,
yes.
and the Southwest person with the south, and we're dictating a system-wide coordinator, and I'd prefer to take those four lines out and let you work it out with the commissioner on how, but give you flexibility. Would that be okay with you, or?
We want system-wide coordination, however.
Okay. The chair is going to move to delete lines 9.30 to 9.33 on page 9. Representative Severson, does that make sense? That we'd want to give a maximum flexibility with the commissioner working with MNSCU rather than dictating a position?
Mr. Chair, it does. That makes sense. I'm just kind of curious then, are you deducting that $100,000 amount from the 2.6 that's appropriated in subparagraph 4?
I'm not, but if you want to, I can.
Well, the only thing I would say, Mr. Chair, is that the organizations have worked hard to put together the backbone that makes up this bill, and they've put in some justification here. I understand the concerns of the committee. I have the same concerns, but I feel like the Veterans Department is pretty bare bones at this point. I think they've done a good job in being accountable for what they have purview over, and I think the higher education system has done the same. I would just ask that the committee just leave the $100,000, and if we want to delete that, let them work together, but keep that $100,000 provision in there.
Sure. How about just to delete the words to fund a system-wide coordinator, and that way we just leave it to say to facilitate. Would that be okay?
I would take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. The chair is going to move on line 9.31 to take out the words to fund a system-wide coordinator. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. On that, amendment's adopted. Further discussion on the bill. We have been informed that Commerce would like to resolve the employment issue, and that is a policy committee with the deadline coming. They'd like to. That's not my purview to handle employment issues, but I think they have some concern, what Representative DeLaForest said, of not having someone say, hey, I need 90 days off. Well, the legislation we thought was 5 days, and we should really have a number, and that's not our committee's job. Representative Kahn.
I'd actually like to add an amendment to the centralized web service site, and maybe Mr. Cleary can help me do it. I'd like to, we do have a system in 16E.03, Administration of State Information and Communication Systems. We do have a definition of a project. We have an evaluation and approval subdivision in it. So I would just like to rep that none of that money is spent until it's gone through 16E.03, the procedures in 16E.03.
Okay, and it sounded like Mr. Puglisi was following that already. Did you have any opposition to that thought? Or I think this is following standard operating procedure.
Mr. Chairman, is it your intent that you're going to move this bill today?
Well, because of bill deadlines and Commerce meeting...
Mr. Chairman, we're going to be here until May 22nd.
Yeah.
No,
I don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Bill deadline, you know.
Now the Rules Committee can wait.
Rules Committee
that.
And so.
Representative Kahn.
I don't mind you moving it as long as you get it back before there are financial issues, because your deadline is later. If it has to go to another policy committee like Commerce, I have no objection to your moving it to that. I just want it back.
Representative Severson, do you mind coming back for, I hate to subject you to intense scrutiny, but
I feel such a warmth from this committee. I have no problem coming back to this committee at all.
But I do want Commerce to resolve the employment issue and then bring it back so we've got that. Okay, do you want to have that as a written amendment and we'll deal with it when we get the bill back again?
Yeah, I think we can,
or
I
Jim,
think we can put
something?
That on now.
I don't hear it.
Oh.
Okay. Talk amongst yourselves for a minute. Representative Severson.
Mr. Cleary put together a report by date for report criteria as an amendment on the subsection 4.
Could you read it for us, please?
Report by January 15, 2007, and each year thereafter. The commissioner shall report to the chairs of the House and Senate committees over policy and finance for the purview of Veteran Affairs. The report shall address all relevant issues raised in writing to the commissioner by those chairs by August 1st of each prior year, effective date 1 July 2006. For the report criteria. The second, subparagraph 6, the sunset provision. The program establishment in subdivision 4 shall expire at the end of the fiscal year in which the number of veterans enrolled in Minnesota public institutions of a higher education becomes less than a number that we will pick, but not later than 30 June 2012. And I would probably say that the numbers that the commissioner has now in terms of 4,000 enrolled would be a good number to start at, and just say if it drops below that, then we're probably getting to the place where we don't need those anymore.
For starters, should we add that and fix it up when it comes back? So otherwise I'll forget about it. Are you okay with that, Representative Severson?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, I want to make sure the author has some considerations here. So The chair will move that amendment. Is the commissioner that number comfortable, 4,000? Okay, so if we ramp down significantly. And I was going to ask, the troops that were just deployed from Mississippi, when are they expected to come back, roughly?
They will be starting to rotate back 300 at a time starting next February, end of February.
It might be more into March or April.
About a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are some needs that we're going to have in the fiscal year before June 30th of next year. But okay, the chair will move the amendment you just read. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Okay, that's adopted. Representative Kahn, how are you doing with Mr. Cleary and Ms. Roberts on that amendment?
Got something that will at least work as a placeholder.
Okay, we have a placeholder. Mr. Cleary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, and members, the amendment would read, Representative Kahn moves to amend House File 2921 as follows. Page 9, line 8, after the period, insert the following.
Prior to encumbering funds from this appropriation, the commissioner must adhere to the provisions of 16E.03.
And then that's going through the Office of Technology for the web issue.
I would take that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves that amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. The amendment's adopted. The chair will move that House File 2921 be recommended to pass and be reordered to the Committee on Commerce. And we'll have the policy issue dealt with there, and then we'll have it sent back to us. Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, I have a very strong objection to that. I don't mind moving it to another policy committee to get it out, but I think it should be sent out without recommendation. I haven't had a chance. There's a number of problems with this, and I was surprised at the reaction because the reaction I'm getting from veterans that I'm talking to about this, in fact, people are calling me about what a bad bill it is. It's the first time these people have ever called me on a veterans bill that it's bad. And there's a number of problems right off, and I'm sure the commissioner can tell me. I think right now Hennepin has two or three veteran service officers for one-fourth of the people in the state, and we're putting these people to sit around in colleges where they don't have any. I think there's a whole lot of problems with this bill, and I definitely do not think it should be going out of here without a real thorough discussion of these problems.
Representative Peterson, with or without recommendation, frankly, doesn't make a lot of difference.
It makes no difference to me, Mr. Chair.
You want
to? I don't want to hold it up and
without
get it through all the policy.
Okay, Representative Mullery moves that House File 2920-1 be referred to the Committee on Commerce without any further recommendation. Representative Severson seems comfortable with that, and then when it comes back, we'll
that's fine.
Come back up and send it to taxes. Thank you. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Okay, congratulations. Move on to Commerce. We'll see you again sometime in the future. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Together.
I appreciate your input.
Meeting adjourned.